WTBQ. Hello and welcome to Shannon's Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux Sanford, and thank you so much for joining us here today on your favorite radio station, WTBQ. And don't forget, we are now 93.5 FM, as well as our very faithful 1110 AM. And I hope you're doing well today. It is a lovely day, or at least it starts out as a lovely day here in the Northeast. It is not raining. Boy, did we have a lot of rain in the last few days. We are really glad to see the sun and have it shining and dry us out a little bit here. And I hope you're doing well today and enjoying this beautiful part of the day. We are going to talk about a subject you do not want to talk about, I am sure, but you're going to listen to me because my guest has something to say about what you don't want to hear about. We are going to talk about death. Ugh, ouch, I know. You're going to talk about your death. Now, that's like really, dare I say, yeah, that's a little bit creepy. Why do we want to talk about death? Well, there's some really good reasons why we want to talk about death. You can talk about it, you can fix it, and then you can go on back to your living, which is what we're going to talk about today. Because if you live really good, you can really plan your death really well, is what I think my guest is going to tell us. I'm very pleased to have with us today Susan Abelman Susan Abel Lieberman, PhD. Dr. Lieberman has written a book. She's written 8 books, actually, and this is her 8th, Death, Dying, and Dessert. What an interesting title. Reflections on 20 Questions About Dying. And I want to welcome Dr. Lieberman to Shannon's Corner. How are you today?
I'm fine, and that was a perfect introduction.
Well, it is a really touchy subject. Let's be honest. I mean, I am very happy living. I really do not want to think about death. But as you very clearly say, we all do this. I mean, we all eventually get there, but we all want to ignore it, don't we? Why do we?
We all want to ignore. Yeah, first of all, we come factory ready to live and not to think about death.
Right.
And then our culture reinforces that. You know, I mean, dying is like you failed.
Yeah, really.
You lost the war.
Really.
And unfortunately, we've all got to do it. And I don't think we should be obsessed with death or we should walk around thinking about it all the time. In fact, one of the reasons I wrote this book was to encourage people to walk into their fear, have some conversations, put in place the documents they need to have, be less afraid, be less stressed, and then go right back to playing golf, eating chocolate, making love, whatever you want to do.
Sounds good to me. You know, I remember many years ago, I was in my early 20s, and I was working at a wonderful place in the city, and somebody who worked there was faced with death, and he did eventually die very quickly. And he kept saying over and over, and I was too young to appreciate this, that he wanted to put his house in order. Yeah. And I didn't understand really what that meant. As I've gotten older, I understand what that means. And I don't really think about that very often, but when you're faced with death and you haven't put your house in order, I suppose that's something you regret, isn't it?
Well, or the people that love you and you've left behind really regret.
Right.
Here's the thing. Your friend was not lucky to die, but lucky to have time to put that house
right
in order. But often, suddenly we become ill, and the opportunity for us to think about what we want, talk about what we want, you know, sort of gets lost in the crisis. It's sort of hard. Somebody was telling me the other day about their father who was in the intensive care unit with pneumonia. Kind of hard to walk in and say, Dad, where did you put that will?
You really, you know, it's true.
Not the moment.
No, it's true. But you wrote this book. It has a very interesting title, Death, Dying, and Dessert. Dessert? I mean, is dying our dessert? I mean, do we get cream pops
dessert?
When we go?
That isn't where the title came from.
No, I know.
About 6 years, you probably looked at the book.
Yeah,
about
I did.
6 years ago, my mother at the time was 92, and she began to slide into a decline, and she entered a hospice program. At the same time, my very good friend Nancy's father was told he had 6 months or less to live by his cardiologist. Mm. So Nancy and I would meet every couple of weeks for sushi, and we would have the same conversation that went like this. Oh, my gosh, I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know about that. If I'd known about that, I would have made a better decision. So we would know about that, and a few weeks would go by, and then we'd have the same conversation all over again because we didn't know anything. We were anxious. We were stressed. We were scared. We were resistant. And after over a year, I looked at her one day and I said, you know what, Nancy, our parents really are going to die and we're going to be next up and we're going to keep having the same dumb conversation about I didn't know what I didn't know. So I started educating myself about end-of-life issues, and I know this sounds odd, but it was just fascinating. I really found there was so much to learn and so many questions to consider. And I was part of a professional women's group at the time, well, I still am, and I wanted to have a conversation with other people about this. And I said to the group one evening, anybody here who wants to come to dinner and talk about death and dying? Well, now you can imagine that not a lot of people
can see me. No, no hands rose.
That are nuts. But we ended up having five people around my dining room table, and for that dinner, I decided we should have angel food cake for dessert. And the conversation was so good, we did it again, and of course you'd know what I had for dessert the next time.
Devil's food cake, right.
And one of my smart friends said, we need to call this group Death, Dying, and Dessert.
That's really cute.
That was over 3 years ago. We've been having these conversations maybe every 8 weeks, and I can't get them to stop. I mean, I keep saying, okay, have we done this enough? And people say, no. We have learned so much from each other. We've become so much less anxious. Many of us have walked into a crisis with family members or even ourselves, and we found that it helps. And this book is to sort of bring those dinner table conversations to the rest of the world so that they can find out death isn't easy. I'm not saying death will be easy. I don't think my own will be easy for me. But we can make it easier, and we can really make it easier for the people who love us if we don't just go, never mind, when I'm dead, I won't care, I'm dead.
Right, which is what most of us kind of think, like, who cares to think about it? When I'm gone, I'm gone, and then there's nothing to think about. But
Have you experienced the death of a close family member?
Not really.
Okay, good for you. And so you don't know the chaos that can ensue. If anybody's ever been the executor of an estate for somebody who died, it's a really crappy job.
Mm.
And the more organized the person was, the easier it is for you and the less stressful. But forget even that. Let's say the person has just died. It's a parent. And in a very quick amount of time, you have to make funeral arrangements. And there are three children. And what happens? The three children have different notions about what dad would have wanted. So you go to buy a coffin, and one child says, oh, we need this hardwood with the brass. You know, dad deserves this. And the other child says, if Dad knew we were putting $12,000 in the ground, he'd die all over again. And the third child says, no, we need a biodegradable. And they stand there and they argue. And they're not arguing over the coffin, really. They're arguing over their heartbreak and their grief and who loved Dad the most,
right,
and who Dad loved the most. And just help these people out. You know, give them a clue. Leave them some instructions. Have some conversations. Maybe before that, one of them was a healthcare proxy. Or maybe Dad never appointed a healthcare proxy. He just assumed it would be Mom. And Mom isn't really able to have those conversations anymore. And so the kids fight about who's in charge. And when that happens, what you get is the most aggressive treatment possible, because the doctors do not want to be caught up in litigation.
So you're basically saying leave instructions, do all the legal things, the kind of nice things to do so nobody has to figure it out. But nobody wants to think about this after. I mean, maybe when you're a certain age, but what age do you start thinking about this? Because anybody who's listening, I mean, I think they got to think they're pretty close to death to start thinking about this.
I know I've written this book that nobody wants to buy, but here's the thing. When people do read
it's
it because
true.
They know me and they feel guilty, or a friend gave it to them and said, you have to read this. I get emails that say, I really didn't want to read this book, but I'm so glad I did. Or my friend Christine's 82-year-old mother read the book. Her daughter put it in her hands, and she called her daughter and said, I'm so embarrassed to tell people I'm loving reading a book about dying. It's not scary. I mean, this book is not scary.
No, it's not scary. It's beautifully written.
When should you deal with this?
Yeah.
So here's the difficult answer. Now.
Everybody
who's listening, right? I mean, if you're 12, you don't have to deal with this. But if you've just gone out in the world and you bought a car and maybe you're buying a condo, now. If you just got married, absolutely now. You've had children and you haven't done this, now. You're living with a committed partner and you're not married, now. You got divorced, now.
You have a chapter in here, Why Are We Afraid? And it's true. I mean, you're saying all this and I'm thinking, oh no, I'm not doing that, because there's a fear that rises up in me. I mean, it's like, oh no, if I don't talk about it, it's not going to be at my door. If I start talking about it, I'm inviting it in.
Talking
I don't want to fight death.
It will not make you sick. It will not kill you. And here's my evidence. Only 30% of people in this country have wills.
Wow.
So if going to the estate attorney and talking about death and dying and writing a will invited trouble, those people should have a higher rate of death and disease than the rest of us. But guess what? They don't.
They probably have a lower if somebody would do a study on that, because they probably feel so confident that they don't have to worry secretly about it. So maybe that's a better thing to do.
Do you know that people who enter hospice care live longer than people with the same conditions who don't?
Really?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
I mean, not years longer, but months
right,
longer,
right.
Because their pain is dealt with, they're not anxious, they're not afraid, and they're not in the hospital, which is a really stress. You think dying is hard, being in the hospital is really hard.
Is that true, huh?
Well, not all the time.
Not all the time, yeah.
You know, if you're in an intensive care unit, or the lights are coming on at 6 in the morning and there are clangs and bangs and people in and out and you feel terrible.
Yeah.
Or you want to be with your family.
Right.
And you know that this is the end. And
gosh.
I don't know how, I struggle with this all the time, to say to people, really, in the end, I think you will think this was a good idea. First of all, we're afraid of death because we think we're not going to die, or if we think about it, we will. Second of all, we think this is hard.
Yes.
It's not hard. One of the things I hope to do in the book is say, look, with the exception of a will, and even for some of you, you can do this at home, all of these documents you can do sitting in your kitchen, in your pajamas, for free.
Well, that's helpful. That's really helpful with the rise of the internet, having this, because 20 years ago we couldn't have done
right,
that. So
right.
this is a big help. We have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some interesting chapters you have in here, and I'm going to pick your brain on what happens after we die, because you seem to know what that's about.
No, that I don't know, but we can talk about it.
We're going to talk about it anyway. Anyway, we are talking with Dr. Lieberman and her wonderful new book. It really is wonderful, Death, Dying, and Dessert. And we'll be back here in just a few on WTBQ.
Hey, Matt, do you know what's a great number?
I know, Dad.
WTBQ.
WTBQ. Hi, and welcome back to Shannon's Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux Sanford, and thank you so much for joining us today. And we are talking about a very serious subject in a very nice way. I am talking with Dr. Susan Lieberman, and she's written a wonderful book, Death, Dying, and Dessert. It's really terrific. It's really nice to read. I mean, when I first picked it up, I thought, oh, no, but it's really so nice. I mean, it's you know, you've written a very easy-to-read book, and you ask questions like how annoying that our souls, our minds, our spirits, that essence of our humanity are housed in time-limited bodies, kind of why. Why is this? Why were we put here to die and be so afraid of it? But we have to look at it because it's one of those passages of life. Now, this is your eighth book, and your other books were all about different passages of life.
Yes.
And so this is kind of what we face as we get older, and there is no choice. So, you know, we certainly don't want to die young. So our next, you know, when we get up there, this is an inevitable thing. So you're,
Shannon, it's not just about when we get up there. 3% of people die before they're 15. So that's so horrific. There's no planning for that.
Right.
72% of people die after 65. Now, I'm after 65, so that's not so great. I'm not eager for this, but I've had a long and full life. But that means that 25% of us die between 15 and 65.
Wow.
And those are the ones of us that go, oh, I don't need to hear this now. I don't need to read about this now. I don't need to think about this now. And you ask me, what happens after death? So here's what happens. You die, and the people you've left behind are nuts. There's chaos. They're unprepared. They don't know what to do. Or as you're dying, there's disharmony, disagreement, there's fear. It's not good to die. You know, there's no way I can say that it's good to die. It can't be easy, but it can be easier. It can be easier.
Do you think there'll ever be a time where it will be easy, that we have learned something that says this is just another passage and that it's okay? I suppose not, because we don't know.
I think for some people, that's true.
Yeah.
And if you're think of everything you're afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
What does fear do to us? It makes us tighten up.
It
makes
us
look away. It makes us avoid. And yet here's something we have to do. So if we can, here's my belief. If we can lay down what I call some synaptic pathways, we can just think a little bit about this and be a little prepared. And we don't have to think about it a lot. Then when we fall into that crisis, it's not, why me?
Right.
Because the truth is, why not you? Who are you? Who am I? This is going to come to all of us. And you say, isn't death horrible? Well, it is horrible, but one of the things I sort of contemplated writing the book was, well, what would happen if nobody died?
Right.
And there were all these 250-year-old people wandering around, and maybe they were still competent, and they had my job.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, this is just the cycle of life. As much as we might not like it, we don't understand it, it is part of why we're here. And maybe it's a wonderful adventure. I mean, we just don't know, and we never really will know. But how do we start that conversation with our friends and family about death and dying? I mean, that's a tough one for those that, let's say you're married and you think that you need to do this, but your husband doesn't want to talk about it, or your wife doesn't. How do we get there
to talk about this? Well, you know, I was in that situation, and my husband is a physician, a pathologist.
Wow.
And, he thought we'd had the conversation. The conversation was no heroic measures.
Uh-huh.
I thought we'd had the conversation, too, till I started studying this, and I went, what does that mean?
Yeah, really?
You know, no heroic measures for whom, when? I think if you start talking, if you start acting, you say, oh, I'm going to fill out this form. I'm going to fill out that form. Gee, it wasn't so hard. Or you might, I was going to say, I don't want to push my book. Of course I want to push my book.
Of course you do.
It doesn't have to be my book. Take the book and give it to your family members and say, I know this is tough stuff, and I want to deal with this, and I could use some help. Could we all read a few chapters and get together? Or fill out your documents. So here's what happened to us, for us. I wanted to have a conversation with my adult children.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years ago, we were all going to be in California at the same time around my birthday. I said, guys, I'm going to tell you what I want for my birthday this year. I'm going to make it easy. And they went, oh, great. What do you want? I said, I want an hour's conversation with you about death and dying.
Oh.
They went, Mom.
Oh, really? Mom?
Mom, you're fine. You're not old. We don't want to do that.
Right.
I went, I know you don't want to do that, but I would really like that for my birthday. Come to dinner with your wives, without your wives. I'll make a nice dinner. We'll have a good bottle of wine. And then I want this conversation. So they're good men. And they said, okay. And we had dinner. We had wine. We had a conversation. And at the end of it, they said, oh, thank you. That wasn't so bad. That was
yeah.
probably a good idea.
You know, you're absolutely right. And even just reading the book, which is really, I'm not saying this lightly, it's a very easy to read book and a very good to read book because it takes away a lot of the fears and it makes you want to plan for this stuff so you feel like you have your house in order, as my friend said years ago. So when you do have your house in order and you look at this for all the things we need to do, I think there is a comfort. So, you know, for the next 20 or 30 or 50 years, however long you're going to be here, you don't have that worry in the back of your mind,
exactly.
Right?
You know, many people are just afraid of dying.
Right, of course.
And I think there are a lot of people like me. I'm not afraid of dying. I'm afraid of suffering.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of pain.
Well, you know, it's like Woody Allen said, I don't mind death. I don't mind dying. I just don't want to be there when it happens.
I love that quote.
Yeah, right.
I love that quote.
It's true.
It's so true.
Yeah.
But so knowing, for me, knowing about hospice and palliative care and knowing there are ways to alleviate my pain and having discussed them with my family is a huge comfort to me.
Mm-hmm. So that's in things like, do we need a healthcare proxy? I mean, a lot of us, I don't really know what that means.
Okay, that's the most important thing you need. So can I talk about that for a minute?
Yes.
A healthcare proxy is a document that says to the world legally, because if it's not written down, it doesn't count. Here is the person I have chosen to speak for me if I cannot speak for myself. So this doesn't even mean you're dying. You could just be in a critical situation and you're going to get better, but somebody has to make some decisions about what to do. And life is not black and white.
Mm.
Medicine is not black and white.
Right.
Sometimes there are difficult decisions. So you need a voice, and you say, well, it'll be my partner. Well, maybe. Maybe your partner was in the same accident with you. Maybe you made that decision when your partner was able to have those conversations and he or she has gotten older and can't. Maybe your partner is not married to you and has no legal standing.
Mm.
So this is a document that says, this is the person who can speak for me. And as important, you have to tell that person how they can speak for you, not how they can speak for them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something online, and I talk about it in the book, the American Bar Association has done the healthcare proxy quiz. You can find it online, download it. You take the quiz, have your proxy, the person who's going to speak for you, take the quiz, and then compare your answers. Do you see the world the same way? Because they're not speaking for them. They're speaking for you.
Uh-huh.
And if you haven't talked to people and you haven't told people what you want, and the healthcare director for Living Will helps with that, then they're going to do what they want.
Did you have your sons take this quiz?
No.
Or just your husband?
No, my husband.
Your husband, okay. I mean, should you have your adult children do this sort of thing? Because
yeah, if they don't want to take the quiz, I have written, and it's in the book, a long, because I like to write, but it doesn't have to be long, supplemental letter that says to my children, I can't tell you what to do because I've never died.
But this is the first time for me, right?
Yeah, I'm going to be a beginner at this, I hope.
Yeah, really.
But here's how I would like you to think about it. And I said, I want as much life as I can get, but here's what life means for me. If these conditions aren't met, then I don't feel that I'm having a life. And I believe there are worse things than dying.
Such as?
Such as not being able to give love or receive love from the people who are around you, not recognizing anything that gives you pleasure in this world, being in continual suffering at a high level of pain, with very little chance of you ever returning to a normal state. There are other things. So I don't think I am going to want to live if I am in those situations. So don't, I mean, you can't shoot me.
No.
My mother's instructions were, when I can't drive anymore, just shoot me.
No, that doesn't work.
But don't keep rescuing me.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm 87 and I get pneumonia and I'm not cognizant and not continent and there's no hope, hold my hand.
Let me go peacefully.
Let me go.
Well, you know, it's a very somber book, but it's very well written and it's very easy to read. And I really suggest
it made you laugh.
It did. It really did. I must say, I really enjoyed it. And it's really has a lot of really helpful information, things that I don't know and probably things that most of us don't know. And we really do need to know.
Oh, thank
you. The book is Death, Dying, and Dessert. No, you did a great job with it. Reflections on 20 Questions About Dying. It is something really that everybody needs, especially if you have older parents, you're married, everybody. I think everybody 30 on probably needs this. You might even say 20 on, but whatever. It is on Shannon's Corner, so if you're in the car and you can't write it down, just go to Shannon's Corner through WTBQ.
It's on Amazon. It's at my website.
I got your website right there, so everything's there.
Oh, you're great.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It was terrific. Thank you
for
writing the book.
Words.
Thank you so much. Great, great book, everybody. Death, Dying, and Dessert. We have to wrap it up for today, but until next time, don't forget to make good choices.